This work has been done mostly as a part of my PhD when I was in Nice and that I just defended. So, I mean, 1 month ago, two months ago. And so parts of it have been related to some joint work with people of the Observatoire de la Côte d'Azur in Nice. And so the motivations are for some applications in cosmology, but I hope that the mathematics in itself will have some interest. So I will just start by recalling the equations of motion, explaining the equations of motion in an expanding universe. So if we just take into account the gravity, so we describe the system by a density of matter rho bar and a velocity v bar. So the first equation expresses the conservation of mass. The second equation is the momentum equation. So it means that the acceleration of the matter is due to the gravitational interaction. Okay. So we will consider the very long time and scale phenomenon, and so we will look at the universe in its globality. So we start to write the global expanding motion of the universe as a uniform expansion. Okay. So each particle has a velocity which is proportional to its distance to the center. And so each particle moves in straight line, okay? And we can parameterize the position of each particle by a coordinate x naught, which will be called the co-moving coordinate. So it amounts to, if the universe is seen like a ball with a radius r of t, this co-moving coordinate just amount to rescale, renormalize the ball so that it's always of size 1, for example. Or, okay. And we make the assumption, which is, to the best I know, I would say that cosmologists mostly agree to make this to make this assumption, saying that the density is close to the critical density, which is the highest density allowing an infinite expansion. So if the density was smaller, was much smaller, the universe would have already contracted. And if it was much bigger, the universe would dilate to infinity. And so this is just the critical density. And so we introduce new variables, which are just oscillations, fluctuations around the uniform repartition of matter, which would follow from the global expanding motion, velocities that are fluctuating around also this global expanding motion. So this velocity v will be called the peculiar velocity. And we take as well perturbations of the gravitational field, sorry, and we rescale the time as the time of with respect to the variable a of t. Okay, and so we get a new system of equation. It's those co-moving coordinates, which is the following. So the mass is still conserved, but note that you get a drag term here, which renders the system not conservative anymore. Okay, due to this rescaling. Note also that the coupling between the acceleration and the density is singular at the origin. Okay. So the first observation, and which is done by which you do when you look at the system is that the singularity of the coupling implies, I would say implies, it makes us look for solutions such that the density at time zero is one. So this density is fluctuations around the uniform density, but the uniform density, of course, when time goes to zero, blows up to infinity. Yeah? But it says that the density at the origin must be very homogeneous, and the initial velocity is balanced by the gradient of the potential of the gravitational field. And so this implies that the initial velocity is potential, and this is a feature which is conserved by the system through the evolution. If you start with a potential velocity, the velocity remains potential for all time. Okay. So we will work on this system in the periodic case, and with a background density equal to one, and we will drop the singularity of the coupling, but as we shall see after, this is not restrictive for what we want to look at. So this is on this model problems we are going to work. And so the reconstruction problem is the following, or the inverse problem is the following. So from what I just said, the initial density is known to be equal to one, and we somehow know the present density of matter in the universe through some measurements. And the goal is to reconstruct the intermediate states. Okay, so know what was the history of the repartition of matter in the universe between time zero and time t, where time t is today. Okay? So the most classical way to study the previous system is to study the Cauchy problem, start from initial velocity, initial density.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sorry?
Which is, you are putting in a fixed expanding universe and you're looking for fluctuations.
Yes. I mean, I was talking in general for...
Right. So that's sort of my first stage.
Yeah.
But in order for us, I mean, that's a reasonable thing if it's a stable system, right? So is there a question of stability?
I haven't made any assumption of I haven't made any approximation. It's just an algebraic.
You've given us a solution, and then you're looking at the equation for fluctuations. About
yeah, but it's not a linearization. I mean, the equation is exact, so I don't. You know, I don't need the solution to be stable or not. It's just an algebraic computation.
But actually, you have made one small assumption, which is you've said that the solution should be bounded at zero, and therefore it is a potential flow.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's true.
A normal rotation, if you made that change of variables without singularity.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, totally. And so this is more a physical assumptions.
I mean, I studied potential flow too, so I like it. But on the other hand, maybe,
I haven't... precisely looked at that. It's just I have taken the assumption as people do it, but they say that this is the only mod that doesn't grow exponentially. If you start with some vorticity or some or just the balance, you know, condition is not precisely satisfied, V equal minus grad P, you got some exponential instabilities, and so it breaks down very quickly. So. Sorry? Yeah, sorry, no, I said exponential, I mean, growing fastly growing instabilities.
Choice of A or
no,
C?
The value of A is fixed by the equation, so that predicts the value. otherwise you're not because the equations are equations for Cushler's matter, for essential Cushler's matter. And that kind of matter gives you this field map.
Yeah, so because Robert is certainly much more expert than me in cosmology, so I have taken this this problem that people were studying already in under this form, and so this slaving assumption that the velocity and the gradient of the potential balance each other is a short term stability assumption. Okay, so just a very simple observation for if you address the Cauchy problem for the Euler-Poisson system in its gravitational form is that in finite time you may have concentration. Just we start with matter at rest, okay, and in finite time you will concentrate in a single place. On the other hand, you could ask at the inverse problem, which is we look for a solution of the system, okay, satisfying the two conditions of density at time zero and at time t. Okay, so here we cannot impose the initial velocity anymore, which is an unknown. So to find to seek solutions of this inverse problem, we'll show that we can reduce it to a minimization problem. Okay, so if we look at the energy, the Hamiltonian of the system, it is given by those two terms, kinetic energy and potential energy. So the Lagrangian of the system is defined by this expression, and we know that if we find critical points for the action of the Lagrangian, critical with respect to variations of rho and v, still satisfying the constraints. So the constraints here are just conservation of mass, Poisson coupling between the field, the gravitational field and the density of matter, and initial and final densities. Okay, so the momentum equation is not a constraint anymore because we want our solution to satisfy it. Okay, so if we find a critical point for this action, we hope to find a solution of the Euler-Poisson system. Okay, and it turns out that in this problem, in some new variables, the Lagrangian will be a convex function, and so finding the critical point will turn out to be a minimization problem. A convex minimization problem. So here's the minimization problem that we look at today. So minimize this action over all the rho, v, and p, such that the four constraints are satisfied. Okay. So why is it a convex problem? So this term is convex. That's not there is no doubt about it. Concerning this term, as itself, it's not convex. But if you reformulate the problem in terms of j, which is rho times v and rho, then the kinetic energy is j squared over 2 rho. And you can express it like this as a supremum of affine functions. So this gives you a convex functional. Okay, so sorry, I think I didn't write. J is the flux. Okay. Moreover, J is a more relevant quantity because it would be odd to define the velocity at points where the density vanishes, you know. Okay, so now in this term, we have a convex minimization problem. And so many informations are going to come from the study of the dual problem. So we will we will call an admissible solution the data rho JP such that so the it satisfies the conservation of mass, the Poisson coupling, and its action, so the action of the Lagrangian is finite, okay? So we just we suppose or we want to know in which conditions such a pairs exist. So if I mean not pairs but families. If we can find somebody like that, it means that the functional that we want to minimize is not identically infinite. Okay? So it can be shown that this you can find such a pair if the initial and finite densities are not too singular. Okay? So not know that I look at the system for a general initial data rho zero, but in the particular case of the cosmological problem it would be one. But I look at the more general solutions. So if the initial and final data are not too bad, we can prove that the functional is not identically plus infinity. And using some classical duality techniques, we will transform the previous minimization problem in a maximization problem, which is a dual problem. And so actually what phi will be the Lagrange multiplier of the conservation of mass, and q will be the Lagrange multiplier of the Poisson equation. And so we are left to study this problem, okay? So classical theorems of convexity tells us that the minimization problem has a solution, and the value of the minimizer is equal to the value of this maximum. Okay, so now we will perform our computations, or maximization among all pair phi q that satisfy this Hamilton-Jacobi inequation. Okay. And it turns out, by standard very trivial calculations, that if you take phi epsilon q epsilon, which is a maximizing sequence for this problem, and if you take this to be the optimal solution for the primal problem, then you have the following convergence result, that the gradient of phi converges to v rho in L2 of rho, and gradient of q epsilon converges to gradient p in L2. Okay. So this is very classical tools that I have used here. So what information do we have already? What results do we have already? So we know already that the solution of the minimization problem will have a potential velocity field. So this is good for us because we are looking for potential solutions. And so the fact that the velocity is potential is really due to the minimization of the kinetic energy. If you want to minimize the kinetic energy, satisfying some conservation equation, conservation of mass, you will always find potential velocity. Moreover, we find that if there exists an admissible solution, there exists a unique minimizer. So an admissible solution is a solution with finite action, okay? If there exists a solution with finite action, there exists a unique minimizer. And we can show that there exists an admissible solution for not too bad initial and finite densities. Moreover, the variational solution that we find will coincide with an eventual smooth potential solution of the Euler-Poisson system satisfying the initial and final densities. Okay, so we see that we have performed our maximization over subsolutions of the Hamilton-Jacobi equations. So functions like such that this is satisfied with a less or equal than zero. And one can prove that the optimal phi, which is a solution of the maximization dual problem, will be actually solution, viscosity solution of this Hamilton-Jacobi equation. And so what does this equation mean? Actually, if you just take the gradient of this identity, what you find is the following equation. You find the following equation, and if you remember that V has to be equal to gradient of phi at the end, it's just the momentum equation. Okay, instead of here it's named Q and it would be named P, but so this Hamilton-Jacobi is the same as the momentum equation for potential flows, okay? And it's coupled with the Poisson equation and the conservation of mass, okay? And moreover, we find that the solution, the optimal solution rho, so V, which is a gradient of phi and P, P and Q coincide at the end of the maximization process, is a weak solution of the Euler-Poisson system. So the first part of the problem is solved. So we given initial and finite densities, we are able to show that there is some existence and uniqueness for the reconstruction problem, at least if we seek for potential flows. Okay. So after I've been looking at some interesting properties of the solutions of this problem, which I call the non-concentration property. So maybe I just
Yeah. So it's a reconstruction problem.
Yes.
Can I say it again? In my mind, it says if you start with any class of densities at time t, and then you know that there is a flow which will achieve any other densities in previous time t0. So it's a sort of a lack of inverse problem. It's saying that if you want to know what rho 0 is, you have to know more than what zero was,
you know what rho zero was.
In your problem.
Yeah.
But we don't, because we weren't born at the Big Bang.
Yes, okay, but I mean it's like if you want to solve an equation of this type, you know, ordinary diffraction of this type. So if you cannot solve it by knowing x of t. No, but I mean, this is the philosophy that you have it's a second order. I mean, formally, it's a second order differential equation. So, either you solve it, you find a solution that satisfies these two constraints. Either you find a solution that satisfies this initial value problem. Exactly, yeah.
So if we'd like to know what rho zero is, we need to know more than just the density.
Yeah, we would need to know the velocity. Exactly. Yeah, that's right. But we don't know the present peculiar velocity. Because what we can measure...
Nor the v itself.
Well, we know... I mean, we have a guess of the global expansion. But we cannot measure... I think it's difficult to measure the the fluctuations of the velocities with respect to this global expansion.
So in some sense, your theorem is negative for a physicist, because with such poor data, it's very hard to predict what it used to be. Is that what you'd like to say?
No, I think it's positive. I think like we know what the initial density was. We know what the present density is, and we can reconstruct the evolution, and we can, and from that we can also guess the peculiar velocities of today. So I took periodic boundary conditions here. We don't know about the initial velocity. We know nothing about the initial velocity. Because actually we know this at time zero, and we know this, okay? I mean, as tau goes to zero. So, like any order of any fluctuations of rho of order tau would give you a different initial value for the velocity. So, I think for this Cauchy problem with this singular coupling, you would not have a uniqueness of the Cauchy problem. So, which is why, I mean, because, yeah, actually because we don't know what the initial fluctuations will look like. Even if we know that rho is one at time zero, we don't know what is the limit as tau goes to zero of this quantity. No, maybe it's a bound. I don't know. I called it an inverse problem, like by opposition with a Cauchy problem, like you know it was. But maybe the boundary value problem is more suitable. Yeah, if you prefer. Okay, so now I would like to look at the features of this way to transport one. You can look at this as a way to transport one density onto another. So there is one way There is one way that has been much studied in the last year. It's if you have one density rho zero, one density rho one of equal mass. Okay. The optimal transportation problem was to find a map T such that T pushes rho zero onto rho one, and you want to minimize the integral of this cost of transportation, okay, where phi of t of x and x is the cost, is what it costs you to transport x over t of x. You cannot see maybe with this. Yes. Okay, so actually, this transportation, for example, it has been looked a lot in the case where phi of x y is x minus y squared. And for example, if you look at this particular case, of just a translation, you want to transport one measure onto its translation. Uh, Well, then the optimal map will be just the following, a uniform translation. Okay? And you can find a time continuous formulation of this problem, which is you want to minimize this section, okay, over all pairs rho v that satisfies the conservation equation and the data of initial and final densities. So there is a time continuous formulation of this problem, which is very comparable to ours, except that we don't have any potential energy term. Okay? And that gives us a way to transport a density onto another, and this can be looked at as another way to transport a density onto another. Here? Yeah? So, it's rho v square. C is the distance square. So I will come back after to this more in more detail to compare. But here, if we look at the solution and make some formal computation on our system, okay. So the convective derivative, which is given by, which is the derivative along the trajectory. If you take the convective derivative of the log of the density, so it will know that you have the minus the divergence of the velocity field, which is the Laplacian, minus the Laplacian of phi. Okay? So taking this into the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, and just so by making some formal computations, if we take the Laplacian of this identity, we find the following inequality. So it's like a second order differential inequation. And if we look at the log of the density along the trajectories, it satisfies this equation. And we want it to remain bounded between time zero and time t. Okay? So we don't impose to be bounded by some constants that we know. We just want it not to blow before time t or when time goes to zero. It can blow at time zero, but not before. And so such a condition imposes that in interior intervals, so with tau strictly positive, okay, the solution has to be uniformly bounded. Okay, so in other words, what we obtain is that whatever the initial conditions that we took for the density and final conditions also we took for the density, at intermediate times, at times 1/2, for example, the density of our solution was bounded by a universal constant that does not depend on the data. So what we obtain is an unconditional bound on the density, and in the same way we obtain an unconditional bound on the derivative of the density, which is the Laplacian of phi. Okay. So I made a slight a picture to summarize a bit this feature. So if you look at this problem, okay. You give the same initial and final densities, and you look at the density at time t. Okay? So suppose that this small ball, for example, is a very concentrated piece of matter. And you transport it, for example, onto itself. At time t over 2, it will be the same. Okay, you just make a uniform translation. Here, since you have the gravitational interaction term, if you start from a very concentrated piece of matter, it will dilate and come back at its initial position. And the value of the density at time t over 2 or any interior time will be uniformly bounded. So we'll just summarize here the results that have been obtained. That if you start so from two probability measures that are enough integrable, then there exists a unique rho j p minimizer of the problem. The problem one is the minimization problem. Moreover, the velocity will be a potential field. Okay. The minimizer will be a weak solution of the Euler-Poisson system, which is consistent with smooth solutions of the Euler-Poisson system. And this, by the way, gives a uniqueness result for the... if you have a smooth solution of the Euler-Poisson system that has a given density at two times, it is unique. If you add moreover, require moreover that the velocity is potential. And the solution enjoys the following properties. So the density is bounded in L infinity in the interior of the time interval. And the Laplacian of phi, which is divergence of the velocity, enjoys the same bound. And so this, as a remark, this implies that the trajectories or the characteristics of the system are well defined. We just have the good regularity to define almost everywhere the characteristics. Okay? Yeah, so the physical problem, in the physical problem, we look for a solution which is potential. And to find any solution, we don't know a priori that our method will work. To find a solution, we look for a minimization problem, and it turns out, by chance, that the minimization problem gives us a potential velocity. So I would just like to talk about some related problems. So, because this technique is applicable to a lot of other similar problems. So, if we take this choice of the Lagrangian, I think, yeah. So it's the problem I talked about here. We get the time continuous formulation of the optimal transportation problem. And the corresponding dynamical equations would be the following. That the particles go in straight lines. Okay, there is no interaction at intermediate time, so the particles go in straight lines, they don't see each other. And the initial velocity is given by this formula where phi is a solution of the Monge-Ampère equation that corresponds to the optimal transportation of rho zero onto rho t. Okay. Now we can look at any problem of this type and have the same existence uniqueness result. I'm not talking about the regularity results, but at least for the existence uniqueness part, if we look at a problem of this type, where f of rho is a convex functional of rho, then you will find potential solutions of this system, okay? And so this notation here means the gradient of the functional f for the Wasserstein metric, which is given by this this formula. So, for example, if you take f of rho to be the integral of rho at a certain power gamma, you will find the equation of gas dynamics, but with a negative pressure. And you will find also potential solution. So actually, this is a bit, what do I say, is a global feature of our process, is that when you have, if you look at the equation of gas dynamics, which is an equation of this type, I would say epsilon. So epsilon equal minus, I don't know if it's minus or plus one, I never remember. But I mean, in one case it's going to be attractive, in the other case it's going to be repulsive. Okay? In the case where it's repulsive, so you get the, I should say, physical pressure, and then the Cauchy problem is well posed. At least for short time, you have existence of smooth solution. If it's attractive, so the what I call negative pressure, then the Cauchy problem is not so well posed, but you can find solutions of the two boundary problem, of the boundary problem, which you cannot find in this case, because in this case you would have, in the case of physical pressure, you would have a minus term here, so the functional is not more convex, so then you are left with a saddle point problem, which is more tricky than a simple minimization problem. And so this case with negative pressure has applications actually in large deviations for random matrices. And so I've heard that Alice Guyonnet has already used this kind of method to obtain some result in a large deviation theory for random matrices. I couldn't talk more precisely about that, but it has applications in other cases than physics. Okay, thank you very much. Yes. Actually, I've not very much thought about that, but I don't think it's essential. It's not essential. It's just that you are in a kind of compact case, you know, because since you look at the situation in co-moving coordinates, you rescale everything to a ball of finite radius, and somehow, yeah, exactly. So the size of the universe is given by the function a of t, you know, t to the power 2/3 that I gave at the beginning. The initial, in the true universe, the initial density would be supported in a single point. And just with this renormalization process, you know, you have a ball with of size t to the power 2/3. That you renormalize at each time to a ball of size 1, and this gives you the commoving coordinates. So then in these commoving coordinates, in the commoving coordinates, I go to a periodic condition. Yeah, by a square. Um, the fact that I had a compact domain gave me a bound for the velocity, the L infinity bound for the velocity, which is unconditional in the same way as the density. So I think I would lose that, but no, not very much. It's not crucial. And for so I know that people have first tried to tackle the reconstruction problem by just looking at this problem, neglecting the gravitational interaction. And they did numerical computations, and they did it in with periodic boundary conditions. Yeah, because you would recover the velocity of today. Yeah. Yeah, so this is, well, there are many, so maybe Robert would be much more. But so, Robert, I've heard that the measurement of peculiar velocity today was very hard, because if you measure redshift, the redshift, you see mostly the global expansion, and the peculiar velocity is kind of lost. Yeah. Yeah, because usually it's given by the redshift.
So you have to find it by two ways, two different ways.
Yeah. And so, and I said at the beginning that we know the repartition of matter today in the universe, which is a very big assumption. I mean, we know some things locally, but globally, of course, we don't. We don't know all the repartition of matter in the universe.
It seems to me that stability is a big, would be a big issue, because all these uncertainties, any of these problems, that's not to me interesting. That is your problem, which is you have made some famous assumptions about the early universe, and some measurements today of density distribution, predict what they this velocity, and then see if it has anything to do with some of the velocities we see. But stability would be whether you have any confidence at all in that velocity, or any of the other possibilities that we have. Moving backwards. I'm interested in the argument given K, which is sort of in the background, of this theory.
So the value of A?
A is a function of T.
Yeah.
And even where there has anything to do with, you know, on a theoretical level with the universe, is again a stability problem. Because, well, it is, I agree, it's a change of coordinates, but it might mean
a relative reason. So, what you agree is that in cosmological terms, you agree Newtonian cosmological relations here about an expanding between the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you think of.
Absolutely.
So, you have a model for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I forgot to mention one thing, is that the fact to model things by a monokinetic model, you know, or like a hydrodynamic model, works only at very large scales. Okay. If you look at smaller case, you have collision, you know, between.
So you're saying V being well defined. Yeah. At a particular.
Yeah, it works on large scales. It's because I mean, with the result I have, so since I have a uniform boon for the density, it means that no galaxy would have been would have formed, you know. So yeah. No, but the bond is very, it's like one, or, you know, so further one. So it still is consistent because you look at things at a very large scale. Under this case, the monokinetic assumption, there is crossing, you know.
Leave the rotation.